Chris Zierke, how are you?
Good, Alex. Great to be back.
Yeah, man.
Your former businesses were franchises.
Yes, three of them, to be exact.
Right. And that's one of the reasons why you're here talking to us about franchise law.
That is correct.
So let's talk about franchise law. And what are we talking about today, Chris? We're talking about HR issues, right?
Today, to me, is one of the most important topics for a franchisee, right? It's you've signed your franchise agreement. If you have real estate issues, that part has been done, and your build out most likely by this point has been done. And now we are running your franchise concept. And at the end of the day, that's important in what will consume most of your time, managing of your people and or contractors. And that's funny. We probably should have talked about this, Alex, I think in episode one. But when you're reviewing a franchise concept, even before you open, and it's very contractor-driven, one of the things you should probably do then is talk to an attorney to make sure that holds up. Because if the economic model is based on contracting, well, that better hold up post-open. Because if it's later determined that those contractors should be employees, your model or your financial model that you base your decision on has greatly changed. It is really important to make sure to understand that even going forward, that the various tests and rules in place, that you follow those. Because what you don't want is for at some point the Department of Labor or some government body to say, no, they're really employees. Because that's where you get into the problems.
In other words, if you get it wrong, you're now liable for back payroll taxes, back
workers' comp,
benefits potentially, overtime.
Yes.
A shameless plug for Cover My Six, the employee bucket, a big chunk of that audit, whether it's for the franchisee or the non-franchisee, is making sure that we get that part right.
Right.
So how do businesses get that right? How do you properly classify someone as one or the other?
So they're, without getting into the minutiae detail, and again, a lot of that's facts-driven, right? But there are really two general tests that most attorneys will look at. It's a control test and an economics realities test, right? And at the end of the day, if the contractor has control over their tools and some of the scheduling and some things like that, and they're not economically completely dependent upon you, in the most franchise systems, you're going to be okay, and that's going to check the boxes that they continue to operate as a contractor.
Yeah, I sometimes use the phrase time, place, manner, and tools.
Right.
If the business is controlling the time, place, manner, and tools, then it's probably an employee. If the individual is controlling them, then it's probably a contractor. The business is really just controlling the results. Then it's a contractor.
And that's a great start, but again, I think it's important.
Yeah.
Every situation,
right,
depending on the facts, and that's why I always like to say, let's talk to us or an attorney,
right,
to really make sure your fact pattern fits the
right
contractor classification.
So a related but different concept is FLSA, exempt versus non-exempt employees. Talk about that.
So one of the challenges, especially if lots of employees, right, is to make sure you understand your employee classification. So at the end of the day, that's, are they salaried? Are they paid by the hour? And in addition to that is, what are the overtime rules, especially if they're hourly? And what happens a lot of the times, and you see this a lot of the times in food concepts, is misclassification. And so what you'll have a manager, and then what a lot of places will do is they'll try to assign these, they think titles protect them, and titles don't protect you,
right,
at all. And they'll try to salary as many people as possible so they don't have to pay overtime, right? And what happens is at some point, the Department of Labor catches up with that. And when that happens, you know, there's lots of issues with back pay and things like that. So it's really important to make sure if you're going to classify someone as a salaried employee, that they meet that test in the FLSA. Otherwise, they'll be paid by the hour. And then it's just important for you to understand what your overtime rules are and what your minimum wage rules are. You have both that at the federal level and at the state level, right? And I think at the end of the year, and this is why I wanted to do this podcast now, it's always a great time to review this. Minimum
right
wage changes a lot. In Ohio, it changes on January 1st, and a lot of other states January 1st. So it's a great time to kind of review all of that and that you're set up to go when January starts.
Right. And so just using the classifications in the FLSA, which is the Fair Labor Standards Act, an exempt employee is exempt from the FLSA and does not need to be paid overtime.
Correct.
And a non-exempt employee does have to be paid overtime for anything over 40 hours a week.
Correct.
Right. And I know there are some nuances that can fill up another podcast about how the 40 hours are calculated based on 1 week or 2 week periods. And that's something you want to talk to a lawyer about, but, I do want to talk about job descriptions for a second, because I know that that is a key part of determining whether someone is properly classified, right? Making sure that I think the best practice from a legal standpoint is making sure that there are job descriptions, number one, and number two, that they are followed. Is that fair?
That is correct.
Right.
And I can tell you, and especially in the franchise systems, it is not a practice that is done very well.
Right.
And by the way, I even include myself when I first, a long time ago, started, and I quickly, listen, you learn through experience, right? I did not have great job descriptions outside of the manager of some of my stores.
Right.
And throughout the years, you quickly learn the importance of job descriptions for every position.
Yeah.
Even if it's for your quote-unquote lowest positions all the way up to your top.
Right. And just to button up this this point, as I understand it, one of the main differences between an exempt and a non-exempt employee is based on discretion and judgment, right? How much judgment and discretion they have in how they do their job. A management level employee will have more discretion, more judgment, and therefore might be more likely to be an exempt employee.
Correct. So, and we won't name the brand, but a significant brand had that same issue, right? They tried to classify a bunch of assistant managers as exempt employees, but where they failed was the discretion test. They didn't have discretion in terms of hiring, firing,
right,
salary discretion.
Yeah, the error that we see the most in the Cover My Six context and with our business clients is they just assume that the difference is between salaried and hourly employees. And it's not. It has nothing to do with that, in fact. So, folks, just because you think you're paying somebody salary doesn't make them exempt, right? You still have to go through the job description and the discretion test.
Correct.
Last point, Chris, that we were going to talk about was handbooks. Employee handbooks, work rules. What are your thoughts?
So it's funny, there are a lot of thoughts on this, and I'm not even sure in the legal community we're always in agreement. But personally, what I could say is running any operations, right, without a handbook or work rules, and they're similar, but I would actually say they're a tad different, is really risky business, especially I think in today's climate. And there are several things that are important to make sure we understand. So, you know, there's a popular saying out there that you should hire slowly and fire quickly. And that makes sense operationally, right? You want to make sure you take your time and hire the right folks for your organization. And the reason that, quote unquote, you want to fire quickly is if someone is destroying your organization, you don't want to keep them around.
Right.
But if you do not have the infrastructure in place to terminate and to discipline, you're going to run amok, or you increase your chances of running afoul of potential, you know, issues when it comes to that area. So handbooks and work rules to me are so important. And what's really important is a couple of things. A is they need to, at least I think it's a best practice to make sure they get those upon hire. The day they start, if not before, they should read them and sign them. And it's absolutely important that you keep track of that. I also like to post it. I also like to review it with them as well, so they know what the rules are. And the second thing is you have to follow whatever you have in your work rules in your handbook. One of the worst things you can do is to have the structures in place and then just be sporadic in terms of your enforcement. If employee A violates some provision, then you need to enforce it if employee B does it as well, right? You cannot pick and choose when you enforce certain rules and provisions. So I think a lot of franchisees, especially ones that don't have a lot of employees, don't feel they need, like if two or three employees, they feel, well, we can just easily manage this on our own. And I would suggest that's not a great practice at all. And, you know, in addition to that, you really, especially in today's climate, need to have a sexual harassment policy in place. And by the way, that's something that should be reviewed to me at the end of every year.
Right.
As rules change, you should be getting your handbook and or work rules reviewed by an attorney just to make sure it is still it makes sense for your organization.
And Chris, in the franchise context, how often is that top-down driven? How often does the franchisor give the franchisee a handbook and then walk away? Or is it something the franchisee does?
The franchisor should not be giving any handbooks or work rules at all. They maybe give you a copy of theirs, maybe, if you just want some ideas.
Right.
But it is your job as the franchisee to put that in place for your employees. And by the way, if you don't like something, the franchisor should not be telling you what is in there. If you don't like something, then they should not be forcing you to put anything in the handbook.
Well, and in most cases, the franchisor is a national organization, but HR rules are state.
Are state, right.
So you may be in Ohio, but your franchisor is national. You want to get an Ohio attorney to help you with your employee handbook and your work rules.
Yes.
Good. All right. Well, Chris, this was really helpful. Folks, stay tuned. We've got another good one coming up. We're in our next episode going to talk about strategic planning from the trenches, from a guy who did it. And check us out on Facebook, on LinkedIn, and on Twitter. And then go to GertzbergLaw.com. And Chris's franchise site, which is
franchiseelegalcenter.com.
There you go. If you need to get a hold of Chris, you can call him at
216-409-9590
or cz@GertzbergLaw.com. Thanks, folks. See you next time.